session with Carlos Regadas. We are going to open the questions in the house. Please raise your hand really high up so I can see you. I will call for the questions, and please, please speak loudly so that everybody can hear. And I already see hands up, so yes.
In my opinion, yes. But yes, basically, in my opinion, it's like things like they happen in real life, that they are actual facts, but then you bring out your conclusions out of the facts. I'm not like trying to be a relativist. It's not like open-ended, it just happens as you saw it. And if in my opinion, she does come back to life. It's not like a dream, but yeah, that's what I personally think.
Yes, a question in the back. Yes.
Most of the sound is direct sound. There's no follies at all in the whole movie, and all of the off-screen sound you're talking about, whenever it's dialogue, it was basically all written on the script. For example, when they're in the swimming pool and the father screams, telling the children to send one of the children for a bath, and all that kind of thing, it was all written down. Basically, I'm glad you paid it. You like the sound design. Well, I don't know if you said that, but but there's sound design, and we used a lot of. A really special stereo microphones called middle side stereo, which creates a codified stereo that sounds really as if it was a surround sound, much better than traditional stereo, and all the ambiences are like that. And all that is dialogue was written down. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but it wasn't very clear anyway. Sorry. Yes, I think I decided to leave them unsubtitled because they are not meant to be relevant in the sense of the lyrics. The song that plays in the garage, I really like that idea because it's a traditional Mexican song of what you call rancheras, which is like really songs from the countryside, but really Mexican. But it's interpreted in country music kind of way, and this is because there's like this very strong influence of North American culture, and somehow between Canada, where there are a lot of Mennonites, and Mexico and all the United States, there's all this kind of same way of life, although Mexico is poorer, of course, but this kind of aspiration, and so they all hear a lot of country music. Yeah, but it's a pity that if you're not Mexican, maybe you miss the fact that it's a typical Mexican song. But it's talking, actually it says, I will not come back. That's what the song says. But it's, I don't want it, I didn't want to subtitle it because it would be too meaningful, and I just wanted it to be in the radio. And the other song, the same thing, it's on TV, and it's Jacques Brel, and he's Belgian. And he's talking about chocolate, actually. So it's not very relevant. Yeah, basically. But he's really powerful, Jacques Brel. He's one of my heroes. So I wanted to see him like on the big screen as you saw him. And also, of course, I think he shares this real power and passion for life. In real life, he did, actually. And in that sense, he's very close to the main character in the movie. They both belong to completely different contexts and cultures. But probably if they had been born in the same culture, they would be very alike. And that's why I wanted him there, because I find him so powerful and alive and passionate. Passionate.
Carlos, muchas felicidades. I was wondering, could you talk a little bit about your experience in working with this culture and with the story and how it affected their values, and if you had, or did they agree automatically to play the story? That, I mean, just your experience.
Did everybody hear the question?
Could you talk a little bit about your own experience and your own, the experience, I'm going to summarize, the experience of the community and the values and in playing this story?
Well, basically, they have been very close to the outside world for 4 centuries, wherever they have been, in Europe or Canada or Mexico or South America. And they do not allow the graphical reproduction of human beings. So of course, photography and cinema or television are completely forbidden and even defined as devilish or demoniac or whatever. And so it was very hard in the beginning to get to know them, even to drive in their area. I felt uncomfortable. But at the same time, they really respect individual freedom, so they would allow their neighbors to do whatever they wanted. So it was not like really getting into a community, but rather into individual families that belonged to this culture. So we were rejected by many, many people. But eventually we found the people that are in the film and other people that lend us their houses and their places. So some were happy, some weren't very happy, but they all accepted it as a fact. And I have to tell you that we were only 11 in the crew, and we didn't use any kind of electricity. So we would all move in 3 pickup trucks, not calling much of anyone's attention. And this is the way we worked. So they all live in big, each house has a big plot of land. So you really don't bother anyone else except the family that decides to accept you. The main character, his name is Cornelio Wall, and he has a country music program on radio in Klotich every Saturday night. And that's how I got to know him, and he somehow worked as a, was for me a Troy horse. Is it Troy horse? Yeah, like he helped me get into the community and introduced me to a lot of people. And eventually that's how it worked. I have to say that the 2 main female roles are not Mexican. There are 2 Mennonites, of course, but one of them, the wife, Esther, she's a Canadian Mennonite and great writer called Miriam Toys. And the other woman, I had to cast in Canada when I couldn't find the women in Mexico. And then I also cast it in Germany and Holland, and that's where I found the other woman, who's German, well, Russian, but lives in Germany now.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the concept of time in the movie, because I noticed he stopped the clock. It didn't seem like it restarted till later. He looked at his watch a couple times, and then you have huge time lapses between seasons. I'm just wondering if there's something more to that.
Can you talk a little bit about the concept of time?
I have to say that it's I cannot give you a very good answer because it's very intuitive for me and I really don't know exactly what is going on. But that said, there's a lot of things to say. Maybe, well, first of all, they live as they lived, well, more or less, 400 years ago, and it's like they're not existing in time somehow. But that's like the external part, and I'm not very much interested in that. But it's like when there's this man having this terrible conflict, eventually, it's as if while the conflict went on until it's solved at the end, his life would stop and everything would stop, because when you are in crisis, very often it happens that you don't have memories of that time, for example, or that everything just disappears or goes into a limbo or something like that. And eventually, this is like, you go into the story, there's this conflict, and until it is solved, nothing happens, and then everything, then after cosmos comes back after chaos, and then that's why also you see the sun going behind the horizon again, and it will eventually come back up, more or less, something like that. It's something I feel but cannot explain very clearly.
Is there a question in the back?
Yes. Can you explain the influence of the
before death
on yourself?
Yes. I wanted to talk about this love triangle. And then I did a trip up north in Mexico, and I saw how the Mennonites lived, and I realized they would be a perfect setting for the story, because there wouldn't be any distractions like money or classes or even preconceptions of beauty, for instance. And all this would be eliminated, and I thought that would be perfect. And then when I thought of the love story, and I imagined the death out of pain, I wanted to solve it, and I didn't know how. And then eventually this just came to me as the only way out. And then, of course, I knew that at that point this would be like Cordette. But also like the Sleeping Beauty, actually. The Sleeping Beauty was even closer to me somehow. And I just decided that I would have to face it and shoot it there are some framings that are very similar to the end of Cordette. And that would be like a homage, if you want. And I was a bit worried that I would get some criticism about robbery. Plagiarism or something. But in the end, I really didn't get worried, and I haven't been accused of that at all, because the whole philosophy is completely different. Like in Odette, it's about a miracle. And everything since the beginning is introduced that way. And in this case, it just happens as anything else in the film, as a butterfly flies or as a car is started. And so my idea is that the miracle is somehow living all the time within or in life anyway. So it can just happen and you don't have to build it up. More or less.
Este movie será presentado en México. ¿Cómo usted piensa que la gente de mexicana le va a aceptar este movie? Totalmente una cultura diferente, en mi opinión.
How do you think that Mexicans will feel about this film?
The film will be released in Mexico in a month, the 12th of October. And I think Mexicans are just like everybody else. Just humans, and some people will like it, and some people will get bored, and some people will get very excited. And I've showed the film in France and in Peru and in Canada so far, and we'll see. It will be a surprise for me, but I never think of audiences or Mexicans or anything like an entity. I just think there's individuals, like right here. That thing of the audience is something that only exists in commercial cinema when you're talking about trends. each person that will see the film has his own life, his own values, his own taste. And that's what really matters to me, and that's why when people tell me, oh, but that's not for audiences, I really feel people are being misrespected. When they're talked about as audiences, as a big, I don't know, entity moving around.
Yes.
It is an original screenplay written by myself. And basically, as I told you, I had the idea, and then I traveled, and by accident, I drove in these communities, and I realized that they were monolithic, and they would be just be a perfect setting. Just like, because everything would be, everything unnecessary wouldn't exist. Even the language, being this blottage that it needs to be subtitled everywhere in the world, permits me to keep a strong neutrality and objectivity rather than slang or ways of talking or class accent or these kind of things that would just be distractions. Like when you were read Little Red Running Hood, there would only be the wolf and the grandmother and the Red Hood. So you would think she's Canadian, for example. I thought she was Mexican. And I think she's actually French. And all of those class, cultural elements are non-existent. So you can really concentrate on just the archetypes and the essence. And this is really interesting to realize how strongly Universally develops from a very particular and clear context, like in the films by Oz, for example.
I'm sorry, could you repeat a little bit louder because I couldn't quite hear what you said.
The kids kissed the mother on the forehead. The Marianne kissed the mother on the lips. Would she have come back to life had she been kissed on the forehead?
I hadn't think of that. To be honest. I don't know. Maybe. No, the whole thing, I'm not trying at all to be sarcastic. No, what I meant is that, what I want to say is that, in my view, it's as if things just happened. And then they just happened. I don't know what would have happened if she had been kissed on the forehead. I don't have, like, this clear intention of, or, even forgetting in Spanish the words. Symbolism. I'm not like looking for particular symbols and meanings that are closed. I don't think of that. She just kisses her on the mouth because that's how I felt that would have to happen. But I'm not necessarily saying that through breath this means that she's bringing back life, or I don't know, nothing like that. And then children usually kiss their mothers on the cheeks or the forehead. And that's all. It's a very interesting observation because I did think of that and I was afraid that in the end it would be like some kind of soft happy ending or something like that, which would reduce the deepness of the thing. So I think that can be a fair reading of the film. Actually, Mennonites, a lot of people have asked me how have the Mennonites reacted to a story of infidelity and what you saw. And I always say that the film permits a moralistic reading, if you want. Like, after all, the wife that comes back and the lover that disappears and the family that is reunited as if it was a biblical story. So they're very happy with the movie. They see it like this, as the story of the prodigal son or something like that. But I think the film permits something very different also. So I have a feeling that there's another reason, and it's not such a nice package in the end. There's a lot of suffering, and there's calm after all, and it's always the cycle in life. I mean, sad parts of life or black nights have necessarily to bring back the day. But what I think is clear is that eventually another black night will come. So it's just like cosmos and chaos alternating. And in the end, it just comes back, but not for good, probably. So that's what I could say, but maybe what you're saying is correct. I really don't know.
We have time for one more question, and then we'll wrap up. Yes, in the middle.
Can you discuss the techniques you use to get those performances out of your actors?
Yes. Actually, you like the performances. You felt them very clear and deep.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Sure. Okay. Well, the thing is, basically, there's no. The main idea is that they don't have to act a character, so they don't know actually what any psychology of the characters or anything like that. You know, like they know what the film will be about because I don't want to cheat them at all. But they don't read the screenplay and they don't try to get into the role of anything. Basically, the main idea is that I just tell them what to say, where to say it, and at what time, and they just do it. And somehow cinema constructs that character. And the whole performance, actually, it's like completely the opposite of theater performance. And this is the basic idea is the famous Kuleshov effect, which is just a photo of a man looking at something, and then juxtaposed with three different things, a plate of food and a dead woman and a boy playing, always with the same man. And each time you see it with the three different elements, you think he's really hungry or he's really happy looking at the boy or really sad looking at the dead woman. And for me, that is like the real essence of acting in cinema. And I believe very much in that. So when, for example, you see the father of the man when they're talking, the man and the father and son, he's his real father in real life. He had never permitted photos taken from him or anything like that, but he accepted the film. And when he's having that conversation, he's just sitting down and he's not thinking about anything at all, and I'm just telling him the dialogues and he's just repeating them. And it all comes to life thanks to other devices. And I really believe in that. And this is what I'm talking about is the Bressonian method. And the only difference that I do use in most of the acting, except that example I just gave you, is that I do let them feel the same feeling that I want to convey in the particular shot, but not through the identification with the actual character, not through getting into his skin, but thinking about something personal, which is the same thing that the character is thinking. For example, when the woman dies in the tree, next to the tree when it's raining, she's thinking about a tragedy that happened to her, and she's really, really sad, she's suffering so much, but she's not thinking about a broken heart. And that's how it all works.
Thank you very much. Thank you.